I forgot to warn you, that pianist is tricky. She has a mind of her own. It's good to be in the house of the Lord today. It's good to have a house of the Lord to go to. I hope that stays around with this next couple of years. Go ahead and turn your Bibles, look at Daniel chapter number 1. Daniel chapter number 1. When you find it, please stand. The book of Daniel, chapter number 1. I'm going to start reading this out of verse number 1. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with part of the vessels of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar to the house of his God, little g, and brought the vessels into the treasury house of his little g God. Verse 3. And the king spake unto Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel and of the king's seed and of the princes, children in whom was no blemish, but well favored and skillful in all wisdom, cunning in knowledge, and the understanding science, and such as had ability in them to stand in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. And the king appointed them a daily provision of the king's meat, and of the wine which he drank, so nourishing them 3 years, that at the end, therefore, they might stand before the king. Dear Lord, pray that you bless this day. Help us, God, just to dive into your word, Lord, and learn what you'd have for us. God, I thank you for your mercies and your grace to bring us all together. Help us, Lord, just to turn our hearts toward you. We ask all in your name. Amen. Be seated. I love the book of Daniel. I love it so much. And the reason is at this time in his life, Daniel was a very young man. They say about either 16 or 18, that was the age he was currently at. He had just been taken from his homeland. And when we think of Daniel, we think of all the mighty things he has done. And we have to also understand that it started out as a very young choice in his life on when he would turn his heart toward God, and that he would continue to serve God over the next 70 years. Because he went through several kings. They had a habit in the pagan kingdoms of changing kings rather rapidly. Some by choice, some not by choice. But Daniel had just begun his journey in a foreign and pagan land. And when we think of Daniel, we think about Daniel's steadfastness and Daniel's just ability to stand in the face of immense pressure, to stand in the face of possible persecution, to stand in the face of oppression, and to say, no, this is what I will be doing because the Lord says to. We think about Daniel and the lions, and think about Daniel and his friends, and we further go on to follow the life of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, as they, who were partners with Daniel, went on to stand on their own 2 feet. We see Daniel being blessed of God in the interpretation of dreams and inside of prophecy. We admire his work, and we just enjoy the steadfastness we see in the life of Daniel. He's a wonderful, wonderful example of a servant of God. And you know, with every great legacy, always has that one point in their life where they chose to walk this path. Greatness isn't handed to folks, it's taken. It's offered, but only those who take it achieve it. And in this part of Daniel, I've always, I guess, growing up, I made the mistake of thinking that Daniel was from a good kingdom. That he was brought from a good kingdom into a bad kingdom. But then I realized that that's not so. So just to kind of gain an idea of where Israel is right now, go ahead and flip back to 2 Chronicles. 2 Chronicles chapter number 36. I'd always had the preconceived notion that Daniel left a kingdom who was thriving, and kingdom who was following God. But that's not so. Second Chronicles chapter number 36. We're going to start inside of verse 5. And Jehoiakim was 25 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 11 years in Jerusalem, and he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord his God. He did that which was evil. Now, Jehoiakim wasn't the first king to do evil in Israel. In fact, he's toward the end of a long line of kings who had continuously done evil in the sight of the Lord, and who had continuously placed Israel under the personal bondage of idolatry and of selfishness, and very much catered to the idea of self-centered worship. Now, there were some good kings in or about that, but at this point in time, when Jehoiakim was king, Daniel was born, and he lived during his reign. And we see that Jehoiakim, in verse 5, was not a good king. In fact, the Bible simply says he did that which was evil in the sight of his God. And so, thereby, verse 6, God, against him came up Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, and bound him in fetters and carried him into Babylon. Nebuchadnezzar also carried of the vessels of the house of the Lord to Babylon and put them in his temple at Babylon. Now the rest of the acts of Jehoiakim and his abominations, which he did, that which was found in him, behold, they are written in the book of the kings of Israel. So let's turn back to Daniel. That's what Daniel left. He didn't leave a thriving kingdom who was following God. No, he left a kingdom of compromise. He left a kingdom who did not really care what the Lord had to say. He left a kingdom whose own king was pushing his people toward idolatry. He left quite the compromising situation. And that's important to understand when you see the early life of Daniel, is that he came from a kingdom who had already forsaken the Lord. He came from a kingdom who had already chosen, we don't need to serve God. We have idols. We have idolatry. We have self to serve. He came from a kingdom who was in no place and in no part had a standing with God. It was considered an abomination. It was considered an evil kingdom. So in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, who we just read, came Nebuchadnezzar. Verse number 6. Now among these captives, were the children of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, unto whom the prince of the eunuchs gave names, and he gave unto them the name of Belshazzar to Daniel, and to Hananiah he gave Shadrach, and to Mishael he gave Meshach, and to Azariah he gave Abednego. Let's do a quick history about conquering kingdoms. In most cultures, when a king would pit himself against another kingdom, they would wipe out all the men, wipe out all the learned scientists, wipe out all of the religious scientists, and totally reduce a kingdom to zero, for the purpose of claiming their land, their wives, their cattle, their children, and thereby restarting an entirely new generation of a mixed race. So what Nebuchadnezzar did was considered revolutionary, wise even. He didn't just conquer a kingdom, he gleaned from it. He took what he could, and he was taking of the talented, he was taking of the well-educated, he was taking of the king's own line, and therefore taking those young men, transplanting them and grafting him into his own scientists, his own wise men. It was never done before. It was revolutionary. The fact that you wouldn't go in and wipe out and restart was not thought of. So Nebuchadnezzar knew what he was doing. This wasn't a common practice. He was one of the first kings to do this, to simply take and steal and make his own. It's quite the wise move. So when Nebuchadnezzar first marched into Jerusalem, there wasn't the thought of, oh, we'll be taken captive. No, the thought was, we're going to die. There wasn't a hope for them. But he took of the well-educated, he took of the choice men and women, and he brought them into his own palace. So imagine yourself in the shoes of Daniel right now. You've just had your homeland raided. You've just had people grabbed up by the dozens and hundreds, tossed into cages and dragged across back to Babylon. You're probably afraid for your life. Your own king, Jehoiakim, has been taken with you. And he's currently just rotting in a dungeon down below. But something unique happens. Nebuchadnezzar says, I will teach you, I will educate you, and I will have you become smarter and better so you can serve me. Well, to someone who was just imagining death, that's a sigh of relief. To someone who was just imagining that they would spend the rest of their eternity very shortly, just in a cage, this was quite the relief. Not only that, but unto the princes of the eunuchs, he gave names. He changed their names. We'll get to that in a little bit. But not only that, look at verse number... Verse 5. And the king appointed them a daily provision of the king's meat. Back in that time, the king had his own kitchen, his own private area where he produced his food, his favorite food, his choice food. And when Nebuchadnezzar took these young men and women, he not only gave them a better education, no, he's now feeding them of what he eats. That's an amazing thing in this culture. It's amazing for the king to share his provisions with anyone, let alone captives. A lot of favor is being chosen and given to Daniel and his friends right now. A lot of favor is being brought down upon them. A lot of blessings even. But the king knew what he was doing. And we know what he was doing. He was taking a nation and he was making this talent his own. He was making these men and women his own to further his kingdom. He was stripping them of their past identities. Their families were dead. Their parents were dead. No, now he was using them for his own purpose. And you see the further stripping of their personalities by a name change. The names of the Hebrew tongue had meaning. They had purpose. They were to draw your mind toward God. They were to draw your mind toward the fact that the Lord is your help or the Lord is your king. They were to take you and make you a part of a godly lineage who served God. So when these names were changed over, Daniel and his friends walked into a room fully stripped of their identities, fully stripped of their homeland, and totally dismantled for the purpose of being rebuilt to serve God. A foreign king and his idols. You have to understand that because the next thing Daniel does is suicide. Absolute suicide. Because Daniel then asks to not be treated the way he's been treated. Look here inside of verse number 8. After they give him the names, but Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with a portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Understand this. They're being given the best of the best. They're being given the greatest education. They're being given the best food. They're being given the best chance at a good life. Well, they came from a conquered kingdom. They have nothing to claim. So for a slave, a conquered nation to stand up and say, man, I don't want what you're giving me. I don't want the king's own food. I don't want to, and he used the word defile myself with the portion of the king's meat. That takes a lot of guts. He stood up to a king who could choose life or death. Quick as he wanted to. They were nothing right now. He wasn't the great man we see him as. He wasn't the great interpreter of dreams that we know him to become. No, right now he was nothing. There was nothing holding the king back from saying, oh, you want my food? Okay, take those four. Kill them. I don't want rebels. There was nothing stopping his immediate death. To a captive nation, this was outright suicide. This was rebellion of the worst sort. You were being given the best gift ever in the king's mind. And you tell me it's not good enough for you? You tell me it's not what you want. It's one thing for a young child to say they don't want broccoli. It's one thing for a young kid to say they don't want cabbage it's one thing for adults to say we don't want arugula. But this was the best meat in the kingdom. This was the best wine in the kingdom. This was the best of the best. And this slave didn't want it. That's from the king's side. Now let's look at Daniel's side. In verse 8, it says that Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not be defiled with a portion of the king's meat. We know from reading onward that this meat that was the king's was also meat sacrificed to idols. We know that the Jews had a very strict diet. We know that their religion called for such things. And the king knew this. He knew who he was conquering. He didn't just pick a king. No, he knew who he was conquering. He was very well versed in the art of war and the art of conquering a nation. He knew who their God was. He knew what their restrictions were. He knew what their names meant. And he changed all of that for the purpose of making them his own. And Daniel, even at the young age of possibly 16 to 18, he knew that he came from, albeit a backwards and backslidden nation, but he still came from a godly heritage. He still came from a place where he was a representation of God's grace. He came from a place where he was the physical essence of what Israel should have been. Now understand, it wasn't just Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego who were captured. It was upwards to 300 to 400 young people captured as well. Talk about peer pressure. He stood there watching all of his friends. Remember, they chose them from some of the king's line and some from the prince's line. They chose upper crust of individuals. These young people were very well versed in the art of walking around royalty and the fashions of the court. They were very well versed in the Mosaic law, as they would still be young people who were being taught the true word. And that's a possibility. But we know Daniel was given the truth. And to watch all of his fellow comrades just give in and just dig into the food, to watch them do this, that's an immense amount of peer pressure. But no, at a very young age, he stood there and he said, I will not defile myself with a portion of the king's meat. He understood that the king meant well. He understood that the king was trying to take care of him. But at the same time, he understood that the king also wanted to totally change who he was. And he stood against that. And he purposed in his own heart to say, no, I will not be put into this mold. No, I will not be totally changed. I will withhold myself from being defiled. Independence isn't a possibility in slavery. This is rebellion. The Lord had favor on Daniel. Verse 9, now God had brought Daniel into favor and tender love with the prince of the eunuchs. The prince of the eunuchs said to Daniel, I fear my lord the king. Well, of course he did. If so-and-so, a.k.a. Daniel, disobeys, and the prince of the eunuchs says, that's fine, you can rebel, it's okay. Well, the next head to fall off is the prince of the eunuchs. This was outright rebellion. He says, I fear the Lord, the king, who has appointed your meat and your drink. Notice, again, who has appointed, he chose the menu. And why should he see your face as worse? Liken that of the children which are of your sort. I don't know about you, but let's focus right here on the diet. How many of you, don't raise your hand please, just think about this. Who here has tried a diet of any sort? Whether for medical reasons or personal reasons, whatever it is. Diets aren't easy. They're painful. You have to restrict yourself. And it's not fun to tell yourself no. It's not fun to restrict yourself. Well, he was raised restricting himself. So now he's given freedom, quote unquote, to do what he wants and to eat what he wants. He's given freedom to eat the king's meat. Well, some would say, well, he came from a good raising and that's why he stayed where he was. No, he didn't. He came from a corrupt kingdom. He came from a place where compromise was rampant. It would have been nothing for him to say, yeah, okay, cool, I'll eat this. Why? Because I want to live. He came from a compromising situation. There was nothing holding him back from just saying, okay, everybody else is doing it, why can't I? He didn't come from a good raising. He came from a compromising kingdom. This faith he displayed, this deciding to disobey, this purposing in his own heart, that came from him. That didn't come from what he was taught, what he saw. There wasn't a rally of people saying, hey, we'll just stick together against the king here. No. That came from him personally. He personally chose in his own heart that regardless of the consequences, he was going to serve God and he was going to keep himself clean from the defiling meat sacrificed to idols. Back to the dieting. We compromise our diet so often. We even have this thing called a cheat day. It's like, yeah, I've been really, really good, so I can have this day. And we look forward to that day. And we wait and we wait and we agonize and we eat celery and all that green stuff. Just so one day in our diet we can just go all out. Whatever we want. Calories don't matter. There are diets that have cheat days. This was his chance to just blend in. And no one would have blamed him. But remember the Daniel we've grown to love. Remember the man we've grown to admire. The one that we've taught our kids about. About how he stood up and regardless of what was happening, he prayed. Regardless of what the penalty was, he worshiped his God. Regardless of what the death would have been. How gruesome or how swift it would have been. He never compromised. We admire that man. But it all started here, with a young man saying no. We know God had favor on his life. We know God blessed him. And we know that he took a 10-day test, and he succeeded. What I want to focus on is the fact that this young man said no. And he purposed in his own heart to serve his God in a foreign land. Like I said, we all have people we admire. We all have those people that we look up to. I personally enjoy the story of Elijah, where Elijah stands there and he fights against the prophets of Baal on Mount Carmel. And he has water thrown on his offering to God. And he's sitting there proving that the Lord is the one true God. And then fire comes down and consumes the offering and the altar and the water. I love those stories. I love Daniel in the lion's den standing up saying, no, I will serve my Lord. I will serve my God. I admire Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego saying, you know what, King? It doesn't matter what you say. We're not going to bow to your idol. We're not going to worship your image. We will worship the one true God. We don't care what you do to us. I admire that steadfastness. And it all began right here with Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, purposing in their own hearts to keep themselves pure. Imagine if Daniel hadn't, just for a second. Imagine if Daniel hadn't purposed in his own heart. No one would have blamed him. He'd been a slight blip on the line of the Bible. It may not have even mentioned him. It may have just said, Jehoiakim with a bad king, Nebuchadnezzar, took, conquered, the end. We didn't have to have a book of Daniel. But because a young man decided then and there, early in his life, that regardless of what happened in this kingdom, he would serve God. That was a catalyst for 70 years of him being a witness of God's greatness in Babylon. 70 years. you remember the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? Do you remember what it said about Nebuchadnezzar? How he said, yours is the one true God. And then the next day he had everyone worship the one true God. That never would have happened if Daniel had been like, no, I'm good. I'm just going to give in. That never would have happened if Daniel would have chosen right then and there to blend in. We didn't have to read about Daniel. We didn't have to know his life. So the Bible has a purpose for everyone. So why is this important in Daniel's life? To us. I want to take the viewpoint off of Daniel's life thousands of years ago. I want to bring it to our life. We all admire great men. We admire their steadfastness. We read about past preachers or past evangelists or past missionaries who have lived a life in fear of man by trusting in God. Who have lived a life doing great things for God. I know Miss Joanne loves to read missionary stories. It didn't always end up well. Sometimes it was, this guy went here, did a great thing, and they killed him. It happens. But the point is, he went there. We read about missionaries who sacrificed everything. There was a group of missionaries who actually packed their own belongings in coffins because they didn't plan on coming back. They had the steadfastness that regardless of what the natives of this land did to them, they were going to serve God. They were going to be a light to this dark part of the world. We have stories upon stories of pastors, missionaries, evangelists, great men and women of God who did great things for God in the face of great opposition. And it all started with them purposing in their own hearts, this is what we will do because God says to, regardless of what happens. So what does that mean to us? We're not in a captive nation. Per se. We're not being dragged across the world to a place you've never been before. No one's changing our name. No one's. But aren't they? I don't mean to fantasize the story, but aren't we? Those of you who grew up in past generations of Christians, are we the same? Influential group of Christians as we were 30 years ago, 40 years ago, 50 years ago? Do we see these great stories of men and women going across and just giving the gospel and giving their life for it? Not really. Something's changed in the Christian life. Something's changed in the genealogy of Christianity. I would submit to you that we are in a captive world. Point number one is that this world is not our home. We're just passing through. I'm so glad I don't have to stay here for eternity. I'm so happy that there is hope that the rapture will come and I'm out of here. Looking forward to not paying taxes. Looking forward to not having to watch the news. How depressing it can be. I would submit to you that Christians in this day and time are under a captivity of some sorts. It's a captivity of our own making. It's a captivity of our own design. We've let the ball slip. We've let the advantage come back to us. We've lost some ground by not standing fast and standing firm against the temptations and against the oppression of this world. What does the name Christian even mean today? Back in the time of Charles Spurgeon, it meant good. You could trust this guy because he was a Christian. You could trust that man because he shook your hand, looked you in the eye, and, oh yeah, I go to so-and-so church. Oh, you go to a church? Yes, I trust you. But Christians of today are not what they used to be. Christianity of today is not what it once was. You don't hear about great deeds being done. You don't hear about great conquests for Christ happening. No, what you hear is so-and-so was a pastor for so-and-so years and they did this and now they're out of ministry. So-and-so was working here and he did this and now And they fired him. It's a bad apple. You hear about quote-unquote Christians being found in compromising situations, whether it's immoral or indecent. You hear about the effects of watered-down Christianity all across America. Weak Christianity. Everyone's doing it. Well, we're Christian in name. Really? How many churches have you seen change their names? In Oklahoma City, there was a church named Bethel Baptist Church. And in my 4 years staying in Oklahoma, they changed it to The Twig. I kid you not. The Twig. The idea was they're part of the branch, part of the vine, part of the hip bone, left bone, whatever it is. The Twig. The one down the street, the First Pentecostal Church of Bethany, Oklahoma, changed their name to Fresh Oil. Don't that get you going? Fresh Oil. It's groovy. It's newfangled. Why'd you change your name? Oh, titles are offensive. Baptist. Hear how that word just like rings off your vocal cords? Baptist. That's offensive. We'd be much better changing our name to like Sunset Church, Sunrise Church, Church in the Wind. I love that one because the Bible says you were like a tree tossed to and fro by the wind. Church in the Wind. There's so many cool names we could change it to. Change it to Gunter & Co. Whatever we wanted to, because to make it more appealing to the masses. We'd get a crowd, wouldn't we? If we just dropped, take that piano off and whatever that thing is, put a drum kit up here where the Matt can play electric guitar, it'd be great. Get the teens involved, have worship night. We can turn these lights to just start spinning around and making blue and orange and pink colors. Give someone an epilepsy attack. We can make this church groovy. We can make this church pleasing. And we can blend right in. Why don't we? Because I have a pastor who is purposed in his own heart that he will not defile himself with the ways and the craftiness of the world. We have a pastor who stands here and proclaims, "Thus saith the Lord," regardless of who is offended or not. I love that about him. I have money set aside to bail him out of jail one day, but I love that about him. I have a pastor who I don't have to wonder, is Vaughn even going to preach biblical this week? Do I need to fact check him? No, I have a pastor who has stood here for, 33 years next week? Who has stood here and proclaimed the truth of God, who has decided that we will not be compromising, we will not be changing our ways, we will not be changing this or changing that, dressing down or changing whatever we need to, just so we get more people in. Just so we get more people in. You know, churches are a lot like food. I'm hungry, so bear with me. We've started buying healthier foods, and it's hurting the wallet. Because for some reason, a head of broccoli costs way more than a bag of chips. But I much prefer the bag of chips. For some reason, healthy food, especially the stuff that says organic, cost so much more than they should. I can grow my own plants if I wanted to in the Texas soil that goes to rock after 2 feet or less than that. Healthy food's expensive, but it's so much better for you. You have to pay a little more for healthy food. You have to work a little harder to stay healthy. You know, being good isn't easy. Having a healthy church isn't easy. You have to teach truth that may be a little bit abrasive because it's the Word of God. You have to take hard stances on this and that, on which version of the Bible to use, what songs we're going to sing. We have to take stances that may be unpopular when it comes to what we will and will not do or who we will and will not marry. It's a difficult choice to make, and it's going to cost a little more. But churches are like food. You can take $10 and by a head of broccoli or a bunch of junk food. In fact, the candy aisle has this whole, like, buy five for five. Wow. You can buy a whole lot of junk food with less money. Churches, all we have to do is compromise to have the big youth department, to have the big service. We can even have like a contemporary service and then like a more of a traditional service. We can compromise and gain the masses. Daniel could have compromised to gain the favor of the king. Instead, he stood against him. He could have easily said, you know what? Let's just join what he has to say. The guy is in charge of us. He's going to kill us. Let's do what he wants to do. But instead, he stood. Christians have the choice that they can compromise and just go with the flow. It's so much easier. Or we can stand for what's right. We can stand for what is true. It's not easy. It's difficult. Journal Norman Schwarzkopf says the truth of the matter is that you always know the right thing to do. The hard part is doing it. Isn't that so true? The hard part is doing it. We like to cut corners. We like to do stuff the easy way. The hard part is standing for what's right. Daniel had the choice, and he purposed in his heart. How does that apply to us individually? We know as a church we have the blessing of a pastor who stands up for what's right. So blessed. But how about us as individuals? Do we ever face times of trial and temptation? I know I do. I hope you all do as well. Otherwise, what plan are y'all paying for? I know that there's times where my Christian values are challenged, and they're in dumb ways. And I use that word very angrily. They're in dumb ways. It's not fair that I have to sacrifice. It's not fair. But why am I sacrificing? For example, while working at the lumber yard, it's a very good Christian environment. No one ever cusses. Kind of like an oil rig, Jim. It's very Christian. No one ever says any bad thing. Yeah, his eyes are like, what are you talking about? Well, a lumber yard wasn't the best place to work during Bible college. It was a little bit rough. And they found out real fast that I was a Bible college kid. Yeah. So they literally greet us with, hi, I'm John. I'm a Pentecostal. Hi, John. Hi, I'm Noel. I am a JW, Jehovah's Witness. Hi, Noel. That's literally how they greeted us, because they had several Bible college comes before and they knew what we stood for and they didn't want to talk to us. Okay. I get it. But I'm still going to tell you about Christ. You know that, right? Yeah. Okay. So for 4 years, I worked with a guy named Cesar. And he was a Jehovah's Witness. And we never agreed on anything. Ever. But I hope he saw who I was. In a good way. And there was times where they would challenge us. Because they could. They would challenge our beliefs. They would challenge our steadfastness. They'd challenge us in ways that were downright mean. We all had the same break room, and they would sit there and be like, all right, be quiet. They're going to pray. Yes, we are. Or, hey, don't say that word on so-and-so. He can't take it. Or they would use their limited vocabulary around us on purpose. Derogatorily describe us, or just, you know, give us hard questions to answer. They enjoyed persecuting us, and it was whatever. And you know what? Even as a young man in Bible college, I have to this day never had my beliefs challenged as much as those 4 years. Never in my life have I had myself challenged that much. Every day, you'd clock in, they'd have a question about the Bible for you, they'd have a question about so-and-so, they'd have their opinion and who cares what you believe. They would have their ways of making you feel bad. The worst jobs went to us Bible college kids. Hey, this thing got broken down. All right, call the Bible college kids. Have us go do it. It was fun. And you know what? I'm not giving you names because you don't know them. But some of my college mates didn't quite succeed in their testimony those 4 years. Some of them were swayed. Some of them gave in. And subsequently, other things arose and they left Bible college. They went in. They went in with the mindset that if it was going to be difficult, they were just going to give in. They went in with the idea that they didn't have to stand for what they believed. It was a job. We had to work there. We had to pay bills. Why make it harder on yourself, right? And those young men are definitely not what they could have been today. But there were some of us who we kept the faith. We stood up what we believed, even though it one time cost one of us our jobs. Not trying to bring it down a little bit. The fact is, we had never had ourselves tested like that before. And we got to see what we were made of, and it hurt sometimes. And it was frustrating going to work at a place to use that money to spend your education just to have your education challenged when you got there. It was frustrating beyond belief. But it paid the bills and it had the hours we needed to survive. And God blessed some of us. We got to actually bring visitors to church. We actually, one time, we all wore orange shirts. That was our uniform. So one Wednesday night, we had 12 visitors from the lumberyard. The pastor looked up and he commented that there was a row of orange. He drew the entire attention, but we had 12 visitors. And over the years at Fox Lumber, we had the privilege to actually lead some of our coworkers to Christ. And some of them, they were really rough dudes. And we had the ability just to pray for them and to be there for them in times of hardships. And some of them got saved even. And they're actually in church today. It was a blessing, but it wasn't easy. And I would read this part of Daniel, chapter number 1. And I would always stop on the 8th verse. Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not be defiled with a portion of the king's meat. And I was like, Lord, help me purpose in my own life that I will not give in to my surroundings. That I will purpose in my heart to stand for your truth and not give in to my anger and not give in to my frustrations and not just give in. And the Lord was good, just like he was in the life of Daniel. But there are Christians today who are not matching up with what they're being challenged with, who are not standing against what they're being tempted with. There are young men and women, even in this church, who are facing temptation. And you know what? They're not standing up. Maybe they have friends who aren't quite in church. And when their friends challenge them, they go, oh, I don't, you know, that's my parents' belief. I only believe that. You know. It happens. There are people in this church who they're one thing at church, but the moment they go to their workplace, totally different person. Not calling anybody, I don't know y'all that well. But I know it's a fact that there's someone here who is a different person outside of church than they are in church. There's a young person here who struggles with the identity in Christ when he's around his friends or her friends, around coworkers, being challenged in the ways of the Spirit. But can I tell you, just like we view Daniel as the great man he became, we can remember that he gained that greatness by fully relying upon God when it came to trials and temptations. And if he can do it, and he had the same God that we have today, we can do it as individuals in Christ. We can do it when it comes to standing against our coworker, standing against our boss, not in an abrasive way. Daniel wasn't trying to be rude, he was trying to be honest. But we can walk in the Spirit outside of church. Wow! We can walk in the Spirit and the power of God outside of these four walls. Or 20 walls, whatever it is. We can walk in the Spirit when we leave here. It's not easy. There's a big target on your back. And just like Nebuchadnezzar was trying to change the identity of his new captives, those who didn't belong, there is an adversary, the devil, who is trying to chip away every day in whatever capacity he can at who you are, trying to chip away at your identity, trying to change your very idea of who you are to get you to be just like every other backslidden, laid back Christian. Daniel and his four friends were a target. And they were watched. And they were looked at. Those guys are different. They're rebels. They were tested. I had the idea that they were even ridiculed by their own fellow Jews, their own fellow Israelites. I have a feeling that they were ridiculed for challenging. Because what if their standing up to Nebuchadnezzar caused ramifications of consequences? Can you imagine Daniel sitting there saying, you know what? I will not defile myself. And the guy next to him has got a mouthful of bacon. He's like, dude, don't ruin this for us. This guy has killed so many people. Don't get us in trouble. Just eat it. Why? Because they're all kids, and kids don't like peer pressure. Sitting there saying, I'd just like to not eat this or not drink this. And the guy goes, shush. They came from a compromising nation. They came from a nation who followed after idols. They came from that. Why is it so different in this new world? We came from sin-filled lives. We came from the easiness of sin. We came from the wonderful, great, sin-filled life. We were changed. We were bought with a price. We were given a new name. We were given a new identity as children of God. But it gets hard. We're being tempted. We're being tested. Let's just go back to what we were. No one cared that we were sinners. No one cared that we were lost. Let's just live like that. I don't want to embrace my new identity in Christ. We were given a new life by God. And yet Satan continues to try to defile us with the temptations of the world, with the ways of the world. He likes to take our gifts and use it for his own glory. Remember, Nebuchadnezzar picked out the best of the best, the most talented. He saw the gifts and he was going to take them and use them for himself. And young people and elderly people, y'all have gifts. Y'all have talents and ability that the world sees. And they're like, hey, that guy can talk. Let's have him do this for us. For example, the other popular Bible college job was car salesman. Why? Because a lot of us could talk. And we could charm. And we could smile. Like, yeah, you want a Volvo, don't you? Some of the Bible college kids went to sell cars. Couldn't do it. I can't lie to folks like that. I can't do it. I don't buy cars from dealerships. Because I don't like being lied to. It's just my thing. I buy cars from folks who have no idea what they have. And I know it works. And I can fix it. I buy cars that may need work done to them. Because I don't like walking in and being lied to and paying more than what I wanted to. I don't like it. It bugs me. And I, furthermore, could never sell cars because I'm honest. Well, this here is piece of junk. You want it? $5,000. I couldn't do it. I could not lie like that. This has got such a great security system and it's got the nice sound system. But does it run? It's got problems. It burns through oil. but those rims are nice. I couldn't do it. And the devil, he sees the talents that we as Christians have, and he sees it, and he wants to corrupt us and use us for his own abilities. He wants to take our voices that God has given us to sing his praises and say, hey, you have a talent for country music. Move to Nashville. Couldn't live there either. Move to Nashville. Hey, you have the great ability to play the guitar. Have you tried electric? And have you tried rock and roll? That's God's music. We have the great ability to win folks with our character. Whatever it is, the devil desires to take you, to mold you, and to make you into something that is an abomination. Remember, the devil cannot create. He only corrupts. When God creates, the devil corrupts. He sees your talent, young person. He sees your talent and he wants to change you as soon as he can into someone who will lead others away. It's the truth. He sees the young men and women who have the ability to persuade and he wants to get them doubting. Is it really important what Bible you use? Is it really important what music you listen to? Is it really, really, does it really matter? No. Does it matter? The devil says. Older Christians. The devil will like it nothing better than to topple you. Than knock you over. As an example to all those younger ones that you can't beat the devil. He can't win. Daniel spent 70 years serving God. And even though the devil couldn't get him in his early years, he tried again and again and again. And he couldn't get Daniel. So let's give the other three, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, again and again and again. And all throughout Daniel's life, he was tested. All throughout Daniel's life, he was given the opportunity to stop. All throughout his life. Young people, you think you're tested? Wait till you get older. It doesn't stop. Wait till you become a stronger Christian. What happens when you're a stronger Christian? Stronger oppression. What happens when you're a more steadfast knowledge of the Word of God and you grow inside of God's love and favor? What happens when you get stronger? The temptation gets stronger. The fight gets harder. You think it's a coincidence that there are faithful men of God who all of a sudden run away with their secretaries? Well, that just happened. No. It was a strong temptation just knocking at them, getting them, trying to get to them. You think it's strange when you see a church that has been First Baptist Church of such and such place for 50 years on their 51st anniversary, the name changes to the twig, the river, the stream, something groovy. Think it's a coincidence? How can the devil take these mighty men? It's because we're men. How can the devil just they get up in the fight? They stopped purposing like they did when they were younger. They got tired of it. You know, personal belief that the most targeted demographic of people in a church are the parents of big families. Personal belief. Because I've seen churches reduced to half by a couple of big families leaving because the father or mother didn't want to be here anymore. I've seen parents move because they weren't, feeling it here. They wanted to try something different. When them trying something different ended up having all eight of their kids outside of God's will for their life. I know because I know them. I've seen big families reduced to a scattered bunch of heathens because God had them right where he wanted them. But then the devil took control of the head of the family. Then it went downhill from there. It's sad. I personally believe that one of the most targeted groups in the church is big families. I personally believe that the adults in a church are the biggest target for the devil. I'm not saying that young children aren't. I'm not saying the teens aren't a big issue. The teens have the security of having a good parent. The teens have the security of having parents who love the Lord. And there's a defense there. But if the devil can get to you, father, mother, uncle, aunt, the devil can get to you, man, that goes an entire generation of churchgoers. So don't think, well, this happened in Daniel's life when he was young, so we're good. No. Those of you who have fought the devil for years, you know it just gets harder. It gets frustratingly harder. It gets frustratingly more difficult to try to fight off temptations. It gets more difficult the further you go. My friend, if Daniel can do it, how did he do it? Oh, yeah. In the power of God. In the power of God, Daniel stood against king after king after king. Because remember, they went through a lot of kings. A lot. Daniel himself went through 5 different kings in 70 years. That's a lot of assassinations. He went through king after king. As Christians, we will go through leader after world leader, president after president, VP after VP, governor after governor. And throughout our Christian life, we'll have many oppositions who are in office. But it doesn't change the fact that we serve the one true God. It doesn't change the fact that we serve one who is greater than all of them combined. Regardless of how much power each king held over Daniel in captivity, regardless of how much pressure there was, he served the one true God. And it didn't matter who was the next king. It didn't matter what his next death threat was. It didn't matter how difficult it would be. Daniel served God. And in time and time again, God brought him through difficulty after difficulty. And young people and elderly people, we serve the same God Daniel did. And regardless of who's in charge of the state, of the city, of the nation, of the world, regardless of what happens, we serve the one true God. And it is through His power that we will be able to defeat our temptations and our trials. Because the devil's already lost. He's already been defeated by God. It's just a matter of time. He knows he can't defeat God, so he's trying to get God's children. Time and time again, he will attack us. Time and time again, he will fight at us. Remember the names? You know, Daniel's name meant God is my judge. Again, a reminder of who his Lord was. Belshazzar, his name changed, was one who lays up treasure in secret. Not the same as God is my judge. Hananiah means Yahweh has been gracious. They changed it to Shadrach, meaning command of Aku, which is one of the false gods. The Babylonian god of the sun. Mishael means who is like God. His name was changed to Meshach, which was a representation of the goddess, I guess at that time would be Ashtaroth, which had other names, like in Greek she was known as Venus, and in Greek she was known as Aphrodite, and in Roman she was known as Venus, the goddess of love and sensual behaviors. It'd be a horrible name. Mishael, who was like God, changed to one that worships Aphrodite. Azariah, aided by God, what a name that is, changed to Abednego, servant of Nebuah, another false god. These young men had everything taken from them. There's times in our life we will feel like everything that we have been and everything that we are has been taken or stripped from us. We will feel like we're just alone in this world, the only ones being attacked. Remember Elijah? He said, Lord, I'm the only one left. They're all gone. God said, no, I have way more. Benjamin Franklin once said, if you fail to plan, you are planning to fail. This quote doesn't just apply to time management. It'll perfectly fit in the life of a Christian. If we just go with the flow, yes, whatever is going to happen, happens. We don't purpose in our own hearts that regardless of what temptations or trials come, we are going to stand in the sight of God, regardless of who's in charge or what the policies in place are, regardless of what the... Be careful here. Regardless of what the corrupt law is, we will stand on the side of truth and righteousness, regardless of what will happen. If we stand with God, we will stand. It's not easy. But we need a purpose in our hearts to stay with God, close to Him in a Bible reading, in our prayer time, close to Him inside of our day-to-day walk with Him, because we are a target in this world. It's just going to get worse, y'all. This world's just going to get worse. I don't know when. No idea when. But as the Bible states, it will just get worse until God calls us home. It's just going to get harder to be a Christian. It's just going to get harder to be a Baptist. It's just going to get harder to be a true light in a dark world. You're a target. It's just going to get harder. King after king, it just got harder for Daniel. King after king. But he served the one true God. Young people, now is the time to decide who you will serve. Now is. Yesterday was. Now is the time to decide whose side you're on. Because you're just going to be challenged on it every day of your life. Older Christians, now is not the time to give in. Now is not the time to say, I'm done fighting. What happens, happens. Now is not the time to say, whatever. Because there's still a battle going on. And there's still a temptation, there's still a tempter who's out there trying to get what you are and what God has blessed you with. Now is not the time to fall by the wayside. It's just going to get worse. And you know what? God is just going to get better. There's hope for those who serve God. You ask Daniel today, you say, Daniel, do you regret any of it? He'll say no. Because the longer you serve God, the sweeter that relationship gets. The sweeter that walk with Him gets. The more enjoyable your time with God can be. Just like any relationship, the longer you know each other, the better that bond is. As we leave here, both young and old, we're going to enter into a fight, a battle that's been going for ages. And we're a part of that battle. We have to stay by the stuff. We have to stand fast for our values, for our Christian ways. We have to stand regardless of what is thrown our way. We stand in the Bible. We stand on the church. We stand on the one true God. We stand on the one way to heaven. Doesn't matter what everybody else thinks. They can be wrong. We will not compromise ourselves. We will not allow ourselves to be defiled because we serve the one true God and it is Him alone.